Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. It is Valentine's Day that John and I are recording this, and we've got a lovely guest today to share the love of influencing and presenting with us. We've got Lee Warren, who is joining us. Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm very excited actually about having you on the podcast, Lee, because you and I are speaking together at a conference in Berlin for the Alexander Technique, aren't we? Is it in August?
August 22, yeah.
August 22 for the Congress. So we will be sharing the stage, talking around how people can kind of market their businesses better and market themselves better. And I think what's really nice about having you on the podcast today is we get to talk a little bit about helping people market themselves better, and particularly extending that out into a wider leadership context. But before we jump into that, I'd love it if you could introduce yourself to our listeners, because when I had a look at you on your website, you call yourself a business communications expert. So do you want to just explain what that is and what you do? And we'll go from there.
Yeah, of course. I probably should say the word expert quite quietly. I mean, that's quite a claim, isn't it? But I have an interest in my background is in broadly in two things. I was in sales for a long time, and I ended up being head of sales at News International, a global media publication, media company, publishers of the Times and so on. But also I've had a parallel life as a professional performer, a magician and mind reader. So I've spent most of my life in one way or another having to engage people, having to get my ideas across to people, build trust with people, get credibility with people in different ways, one in sales and one in terms of performing. And over the years, those sort of two came together, and it makes quite a nice mixture. So these days, what I do, most of my work is either keynote speaking or running workshops, helping other people to become more engaging, more compelling, and network and present and influence better.
Lee, it's wonderful to have you on the show, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the areas that you cover. You mentioned networking in there. It's a word that seems to strike fear into lots and lots of people. Turning up, and I mean, the number of places I've been when maybe three or four people have gone from the same organization and they've stayed together in the same corner, because they're comfortable with that and they won't want to venture any further away. Can you give some of our listeners a couple of tips about turning up at a networking event and what really will work for them?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the thing you said about, you know, networking striking fear, I do a lot of work on networking, a lot of workshops, a lot of talks on networking. And I always ask audiences, if I said to you right now, you have to leave this room, walk into a room full of strangers with warm white wine and bad canapes, how would that make you feel? And everybody said, oh, stressed, worried, inauthentic, clumsy. And once when I was giving a talk, she shouted it from almost the back of the room. She said, I hate networking. And actually, for a while, that became the title of my keynote on networking. I called it I Hate Networking until I saw it in a program agenda. And the title was, it was after lunch, and it said, I Hate Networking with Lee Warren. So I had to abandon that.
Well, maybe not, yeah.
Anyway, so quick tip. So there are quite a few things you can do, but broadly, one of the first things you can do comes back to this word preparation. So far too many people, they go to and if we again think of networking in its broadest sense, so that can be a breakfast seminar, it can be going to a business networking event in the evening, it can be going to an industry get together, it can be, you know, conference, awards, whatever. Far too many people go to networking events with no idea why they're there, other than speech marks to network, right? Now, that's not a goal. That doesn't animate you. It doesn't inspire you. It doesn't give you any focus. So one of the very simple things you can do is give yourself a really, really simple goal. And I work with someone who was made into a senior partner. She made partner in a consultancy firm, and she really, really hated, I mean, with a passion, she hated networking. And we did some work together because she needed to do it. It was not negotiable. And one of the first things we did, I said, okay, what would be an achievable goal that you genuinely could do and you'd feel, okay, I've done it and that's enough. Just a really simple thing that will get you into the room. And she said, okay, well, I could meet one new person. I think I could do that and feel comfortable. I said, great, let's make that your goal for the next networking event. Just do that and see what happens. And guess what happened? She met one person. She had a nice conversation. It was 10 minutes into the event. She thought, I can't leave. And she ended up meeting several other people. And it was just that focus, just having that tiny one goal that made the event much more bearable. Now, obviously, everybody listening to this will have different goals. I'm not saying meet one person is everybody's goal. But when you give yourself some goals in relation to the event you're going to be at, in relation to, you know, what you need, what you might be able to give to other people, it really does give you a bit of energy, a bit of focus. And then a very simple tip, just to help people who might walk into rooms and feel a bit intimidated, because we go back to being at a school disco, I think, emotionally, when we're at networking events, right? You know, we get told all the time at school, don't talk to strangers, whatever you do, don't talk to strangers. And then suddenly you get a job and people throw you in a room and say, go and talk to strangers, get their LinkedIn profile, right? So it's very easy to walk into a room and do exactly what you said, John, which is you just hang around with the people you already know, or you stand in the corner and you sort of look at this room of people and they all seem to know how to do it. They all seem to be confident and happy. But honestly, just look at the room and realize everybody is in the same state as you. Everybody feels a bit clumsy. Everybody is worried about the small talk and how do I start a conversation? So look around the room and whoever is on their own, the first person you see standing on their own, don't think about it. Just walk up to them and say, hello, I haven't been here before. Or hello, my name's Lee. Or hello, I don't think we've met yet. You don't need any classy openers or anything like that. Just an authentic hello. Nearly always the other person will be really relieved you've done it, because they were standing there thinking, how the hell do I speak to someone? And that will help you to get the evening off or the afternoon off to a better start.
Do you know what? That sounds awesome. Basically, your job is to help people feel more confident, which is a lovely gift to share with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have a huge amount of fun doing it as well, actually, which makes it a good job, yeah.
Oh, what an awesome job. So take us back. You skirted over very quickly. You were like, oh, you know, I worked at News International and blah, blah, blah. And then I was a magician. It's like, just like that's normal, a normal job to have and a normal kind of combination to bring to the party. It is pretty unique. So take us back. Where did it all start and where did this journey start for you?
Well, magic, it started. I don't remember. My mum tells me it started when I was four. Apparently, I had a magic trick in my Christmas stocking, sort of quite a classic magician story, really, and just fell in love with it. And my birthday's 10 days after Christmas. And I think that the family legend is my family were so bored with seeing this one trick over and over again that for my birthday party, they bought me a magic set. So at least they'd see some different tricks. And I just fell in love with it. And when I was 12, I did a magic competition and I won. And that sort of led to me getting some paid work as a teenager, as a performer. So I always knew I was going to be doing that. But then I had a serious role as well, a proper job. I needed to get a mortgage, basically, when I was in my 20s. So I took on some sales roles and found I really enjoyed that and had an ability at it.
And where does the Alexander technique come into that? Because I think I'm right in thinking that you're also you're qualified as a teacher for AT.
Talk
about what that is. And the reason I bring this up is it's so important for performance. Like, one of the reasons you may have like Alexander technique classes is to improve your performance, as well as many other things. So talk us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of performers come across this thing called the Alexander technique. It's very commonly taught in drama schools and music colleges and conservatoires and so on. And it's quite a hard thing to put into words, the Alexander technique. And anyone who does it sort of feels a bit nervous because it's very hard to paraphrase it quickly. But basically, the Alexander technique is a way of understanding how the way that you think affects the way that you are, the way that you move and the way that you perform, and vice versa, a way of understanding how the way that you move and how the way that you perform affects the way that you think. It's a way of understanding both those things. And really understanding your reaction. So the practical outputs of the technique, of learning the Alexander technique, are in general that people become more self-aware, slightly calmer, slightly more confident, and a bit more capable of being able to look after themselves, certainly under stressful situations. In fact, the technique is at its most useful when you're under pressure and when you're under stress. It's one of those things you don't really need when you're lying on a beach on holiday. Everything's sort of all right then. But it's a good stress tool, I suppose.
I think there'll be quite a few people listening to this in leadership roles that are quite stressed. This is pricking a little bit of an interest for. So do you want to elaborate a little bit on some of those tools and tips and what it includes? Because yeah, that the way you explained it there, I haven't heard of it explained like that before.
Yeah, there are lots of different ways of explaining it, and I think everyone who explains it from their own point of view and what's been most useful to them in many ways. So one of the common things that happens in certainly in leadership or anyone who's on a leadership journey in terms of stress is stress is very uncreative, right? Stress, very often when we're stressed, our options get limited. We tend to think in more narrow ways because we're dealing with things when they blow up rather than dealing with things when they show up, as David Allen says. And so what the Alexander Technique enables you to do is take a little step back and, if you like, increase your awareness. So you're not just focused on the task at hand. You also can focus on the quality of your own thinking when you're dealing with the task at hand. And that extra focus, that extra bit of attention, enables you to make better decisions and to give yourself a bit of calmness and a bit of confidence in the quality of your decision.
When you're talking about that presenting position for a leader, that can often be one of the most stressful times, particularly if they've got the full gamut, all the people in front of them, and they've done all the preparation and they're doing okay, and they're probably, I don't know, 5 minutes into the presentation, and then all of a sudden that little voice comes in your head, it's going, how am I doing? Is that Alexander Technique there to help something like those, preventing those kind of thoughts from entering your head? Because I think once you do, your thinking becomes, and your creativity becomes very narrow, because you're now trying to deal with an emotion that is not helpful in getting you to deliver what you're there to do.
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, the Alexander Technique could be a big help there. The longer answer is in two different ways. So there's one way, which is to do with what we might call performance or performing skills. So this is your physical and vocal technique, if you like, when you're delivering a presentation. So your ability to look relaxed and calm, to sound calm and authoritative, all of those sort of things. And those are performing skills. And the technique is a great help with those. And that's why many performers have lessons in Alexander Technique. So fundamentally, are you physically relaxed? Are you grounded? All those things will help you to be confident. However, there's a less obvious answer, which I think is more important, which is really what the Alexander Technique is about, is it's about choosing where do you have your awareness? What are you choosing to focus on moment by moment? And one of the things that goes wrong for many people in presenting, particularly in important presentations, is many of us as presenters think about ourselves too much. We're too focused on ourselves. Now, the only person who doesn't need to hear your presentation is you yourself.
Yes. Right?
You know it already. You don't. And it's bonkers that most presenters are focused on themselves. And also, they're often focused on things that are least interesting to audiences. When an audience listens to a presentation, when they're there at a presentation, they're focused on what's in this for me? Am I getting something out of this? Is this a good use of my time? Will I make any money? Will you make me laugh? Will I look better? You know, they're focused on themselves. But many presenters are not focused on those things. They're not focused on delivering great messages to audiences. They're focused on, am I umming and ahhing too much? Is my neck going red? Are my hands shaky? Audiences really don't care about those things. They're not interested in the least. If you've got a good message, a compelling message that's right for the audience and will leave them better off at the end of your presentation than the beginning, they'll forgive almost anything else. So sorry, that's a very long answer, but the point I'm making is what the Alexander Technique helps you to do is change your focus. And certainly one of the things when I'm coaching people or teaching, presenting very quickly, is to try and get people to relentlessly focus on the audience rather than themselves too much. And it can really transform people's presenting ability.
That is really interesting to know. It's really about the awareness and where you focus. And we're doing this recording over Zoom today. And when we do Teams and Zoom and what have you, there you are almost talking to yourself. And I think that gives a really good example. Perhaps how much it differs a little bit face to face. If you were stood in front of an audience, you've not necessarily got a picture of you. But I'm just wondering, now that we're moving into this more hybrid way of working, how many people are really even more aware of their own performance because they can see themselves. I mean, I'm trying to look at you and Rachel now, but I can still see me in my peripheral vision. So that's almost going to enhance my, or you know, make me be more critical of my own performance rather than concentrating on yourself and Rachel when I'm talking to you.
I think that's absolutely true. There are pros and cons in any environment. One of the great pros of this environment, though, this virtual environment, is that you can record yourself and watch yourself back. And a lot of people don't like doing it. In fact, very few of us like doing it. It can feel very clumsy and very awkward. But it also means you can get some absolutely pitch perfect feedback on how you're coming across to other people, which can help you improve very quickly. I think though, there's something really quite interesting about focusing on what the audience, one of the first questions I always get people to deal with is what does the audience expect to hear and what do they need to hear, for example, right? And when you focus on what people really need to hear, what it does again in your preparation to present is it helps you to get out of your own stuff, out of focusing on yourself too much and really delivering something that's meaningful for an audience. And one other thing I'd say is when we're particularly in business communications, when we're giving, for example, a pitch to a client, or when we're presenting internally, or we're delivering a town hall or a project update, most of this actually is about communicating more than performing. And one of the things I've also noticed, because most people in business roles are not performers, they're not natural performers, and neither should they be. You know, I mean, even professional performers spend years at academies learning how to do it. So I think also mentally, it's quite useful to switch off that thing that says I need to be a good performer, and actually say, what am I communicating? How can I get this across to other people in a way that matters to them and resonates with them? It takes the stress of performing away from you.
Oh, I love that, Lee. And it would be amiss of me not to ask probably like the 6 or 7 questions that are going around in our listeners' heads right now. And they're like, you've got this guy on the podcast who's talking about presenting and we're talking about technology. And is there anything more stressful than waiting to present and the technology not working and you get yourself in a faff? What I really liked about what you just said then is if you can almost shift that focus, you can naturally put yourself in a position where you're thinking about them, not yourself, which is calming in itself. But if you are somebody that tends to get a little bit more stressed or nervous, what would your tips be for somebody that is a nervous performer or hates it? Like, what would you typically coach them on?
It's a great question. And it's probably the most common question in presenting, effectively, how do I, it's very interesting, actually, different industries use different language. So industries that I would say are more sort of people focused tend to use the language around nerves. People ask me, how do I stop being nervous? Industries that are less people focused talk about confidence. And people will say, how can I be more confident? They're both saying the same thing. I just find it quite interesting. Some industries talk about nerves. Some people talk about confidence. But there are some simple things that you can do that really will help. And most of them revolve around what I call having a mini ritual. In other words, having something, just something you know you're going to do before you present. And this is true even if we consider presentation in its widest possible sense. So presenting can be standing up in front of PowerPoint and talking for an hour. It can be just speaking up for 3 minutes in a meeting and getting your point across. It can be just answering that, you know, what do you do networking question. These are all presentations. Some of them are tiny, some of them are very big. But to get yourself into the right state, I think you need to do a few things physically. I think you do need to have a little physical mini ritual, because presenting isn't a normal activity. It's very different to just talking to somebody at a bar. So we do need to get ourselves up to the level of that communication. And so what I do is some very simple things. First of all, prepare earlier than you think you should. I mean, this is crucial. The number of people who turn up to online meetings and at the start of the meeting say, my microphone isn't working, or I couldn't get my camera right, or so. Do this stuff 20 minutes in advance. One of my golden rules in presenting is all problems can be solved by arriving 30 minutes early and having a roll of gaffer tape with you. Right? They're the two things that will sort out all problems. So prepare early. Then just do a couple of things to get your body and voice working well, so that you're effectively, you're telling your brain, okay, I'm about to do something that's a bit different to my everyday. And those things are making sounds that have M's and N's in them. This is one of my favorite things to do. So I always let out a very gentle M sound, as if you were sinking into a hot, warm bath or eating plain, dark, organic chocolate. And it's a nice thing to do because it's quite a relaxing, calming thing to do. But also it makes the front of your face resonate. So it gives you a bit more authority in your voice, calms you down, gives you a bit more authority. Then I like to say a couple of words with M's and N's in them. So those can be words like mademoiselle or marmalade or Amanda, just so you're getting some resonant sounds going. And the sentence I always use, because it makes me laugh and puts me in a good psychological state, is I always say, remember the money. Exaggerating the M's and the N's. It makes everyone chuckle. You can't say it without a smile. And so it puts you into a good state. And then the very last thing, and I know this sounds simple, but it really does make a difference, is to say out loud a couple of times the first things that you're going to say in the presentation. So, for example, the first sentence, and it might be very simple. It might be, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming to the meeting today. And just say that out loud two or three times. And it helps you to avoid all those awkward things where you're warming your voice up in the meeting. You know, you don't want to say, good afternoon, everybody, right? It helps you to come across better straight away. But psychologically, it's quite important because you've said to your brain, okay, I'm ready to go. I need to be awake for this. And it's exactly the same. You know, you wouldn't go for a sprint and just suddenly start sprinting. You'd warm yourself up a little bit. You wouldn't, if you had to play the piano in front of other people, you wouldn't just sit down and start playing. You'd warm your fingers up a bit. So it's the same as that.
I really love those. And thank you for being so detailed with them, because I think often we all know the prepare one. And we say get well prepared, but you've given us three really nice tips there to actually prepare, which is wonderful. So we've been on Alexander technique there and how it's useful for performing. But did that come after your magician career, your magic career? Did you use that to become a better performer, or did you learn it while you were doing your sales training? I'm just seeing a lot of, like, there's so much similarity and so much resonance between them and so much overlap. How did you put them all together?
I don't know if I have put them together successfully yet. It's still part of my own my own journey. But I came across the Alexander technique when I was in my late teens. I wanted to go to drama school and train to be an actor. It was a very brief ambition, but I did that. So I went to drama school. And as part of my preparation for that, I read some books, and many of them about acting recommended learning the Alexander technique. And so when I went to drama school and there were lessons, I grabbed hold of those. And then I just fell in love with that and trained as a teacher.
Awesome. One last question on this before we move on to the good stuff, which is going to be more business focused. There's a few connections just for our more seasoned listeners that have been with us for a while. So we had Melanie Weller on the podcast talking about the vagus nerve last year. And we also had Simon Townend talking about posture. So we've made a lot of connections between what you do with your body and how you come across and how you present. But I remember when I was first learning about the Alexander technique and the role of the head. And it's just the most fascinating fact that I've ever heard. And I'm even checking myself now when I'm doing it. Because your head, is it like 10 or 11 kilos?
I'm a very bad Alexander teacher because I can never remember any of the weights. I can never remember any of the names of the bones or the muscles in the body. But it's heavy. It's much heavier than we might think.
And it's something like when you were talking about being self-aware and what you do with your body, it's just putting your head back a little bit because it weighs 11 kilos. It just, back to Melanie Weller's podcast, is it just relaxes the vagus nerve. And that's a really good way to calm yourself down. So even if, you know, like now I'm looking at you guys on this podcast and I was like naturally leaning forward and then I'm feeling myself, my heart increase and you like to just sit back a little bit. So I think it ties really nicely into people that were particularly interested in those two podcasts. The Alexander technique's a really nice connection to those. But moving on, talk us through Lee Warren as the sales trainer and doing amazing presentation tech. We've talked about presentation techniques, but also this move towards influencing skills and negotiation and all the other great things that you do for business leaders.
There's a big topic, isn't there? So I do very little what you'd call training, actually. Most of what I do is running workshops and giving keynote talks. So One of the challenges I've been given is how to get material, good stuff across in a very short amount of time. And that's why I mentioned it's slightly different to training, because often in training you'll have a program that gets rolled out perhaps over time, or you'll have time to do some detailed work with groups of people over a certain period. And actually, just sort of organically, the way my business has evolved is I've been tasked with delivering very different things to that. So some companies will say, you know, we need to solve all of our internal sales problems, and you've got 45 minutes, by the way, at our at our annual sales conference. So what that means is what I'm always really, really relentlessly focused on is what can I deliver that people can actually take action on right now, can actually do right now. And I've tried to strip out from my own work anything that's theoretical or anything that is practical, but only if you devoted 3 years full-time attention to it. And that's also shifted my view of teaching Alexander Technique as well, by the way. So most of what I do with businesses will be either obviously about sales. In other words, how do we increase the number of sales? Or it will be related to sales in terms of how do we engage our clients better? How do we get out and network better? How do we build our both personal and business brands in the marketplace better? So it'll always be related to sales in one way or another.
That really connects with what you were saying before in the presentation, techniques that you and tips that you gave, in that your forte is really communication, and it's focusing on what's the message that you need to deliver versus how are you feeling, which is a wonderful segue into leadership, because obviously John and I are leadership coaches, and we find that when people come to us for coaching, they're normally in the problem and they're thinking about them and how it's impacting them and everything they've got to do, and they're forgetting to communicate with their teams or have you told the relevant people the right information. So there's a lot of similarities with what you just said there. It doesn't matter whether it's presentation, whether it's influencing, whether it's keynote speaking, it's about killer communication, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the mysteries to me and I've done a lot of leadership work over the last 12 years or so, one of the real mysteries is how often communication gets treated as a luxury skill. It's an absolute mystery to me, because it really is, if not the, it's one of the bits of oil that makes a corporate machine work, right? I mean, you could almost, you know, if you imagined a world where there was no communication, nothing happens, right? Nothing moves. And I think one of the true skills of great leaders, and it's probably a bit of a cliche to say inspire, but it really is to inspire. And I don't mean inspire in a sort of grandstanding, you know, rhetorical, speechy way. But what I mean is that ability to say, look, here's where we need to be, and I need you to want to come with me to that place. And that, it's not the only skill of leadership, but it's such an important one. It's a mystery to me why so many people think of communication as a luxury extra. We might do an hour on it at the end of the year or something.
Yeah, we particularly love it when we see it as a point on a to-do list, learn, you know, communicate, plan. It's like, obviously, you're going to spend all your time on points 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is doing the work, and then you're just naturally going to communicate it after. And I liked your analogy around it being the oil, because it's the thing that everything has to sit in. If you can't communicate your plan that you spent a year developing, there is no plan, because it'll never come to fruition.
100%. And in fact, one of the very first things whenever I sit down, so quite often after I've given a talk or run a workshop, I'll quite often get emails with individual requests. So somebody will say, well, I really enjoyed that. Is there any chance I've got this big thing I need to roll out internally. Is there any chance you could come and help me and work on it? And one of the very first questions I'll always ask people is, what's the goal of this communication? What is it you actually want this communication to achieve? And nearly always the answer will be very vague. All right. So it'll be something like, well, I want people to believe in this project. And OK, well, what will they do if they believe in the project? Oh, well, they'll believe in it more. And there'll be a lot of vagueness around the thinking. And a lot of people tend to think if they say certain words in the right order, they've communicated something. And actually, one of the questions I found most useful, I mean, this is particularly relevant to presenting, but I think it's relevant to all communication, is to answer the question, what do you want the audience to do as a result of this message? All right. And the word do, capital letters, underlined, because until you can really see people physically doing something, you don't know what your communication's actually about. So, for example, you know, if people, you said, oh, I want people to believe in this project at the end of my presentation. Well, what would they do if they believe in the project? Oh, well, they recommend it to their team members. Okay. So your goal isn't to get people to believe in the project. Your goal is to get people to recommend it to other team members. And that's suddenly a very different message. You've got to say different things.
Yeah, it's really interesting how vague the communication is, but people believe it to be as if they've been really quite clear about what they wanted to do. But I think Rachel would sort of validate this. It's like having, when you're coaching somebody, often the first thing that they come out with is not the problem or the subject they really need to go to. You need to go to one underneath that and one underneath that and probably one underneath that. I wonder how much of that is down to not really having a very clear vision as a leader sometimes, or having a clear vision in their head because they're at one point in time, but yet you're at a different point in time to where your followers are. So here you are communicating about this is what you're going to do, but they haven't yet caught up. So we talk a lot about people in leadership positions visioning stuff and explaining that vision and making that very consistent, and also about the purpose of the organization. Long way around of asking the question, but is it around that sort of that vague description for people who are at a different point in time to where the leader is?
I think, yeah, I mean, I really admire coaches. I admire your endless patience. I'm far too impatient to ever be a coach. I think there's a lot of truth in that. But I think also sometimes in order for us to have clear messages, we have to be clear to ourselves. And that requires a lot of work. It's very difficult to be clear. It's very difficult to have clarity. But also it's, you know, the easiest thing in the world is to see the world from our own point of view. And one of the hardest things to do is to see the world from other people's points of view. And this is why, by the way, having a background as a magician is very useful in terms of communication, because when you're a magician, when you do a magic trick, you're the only person that doesn't see magic, right? You see what's actually really happening and nobody else does. But as a magician, to be a good magician, you have to be able to see what you're doing from other people's points of view, often something that never actually happens. It only happens in their minds. And so that's a skill good magicians get quite early on in life, quite early on in their performing. And I think it's a real, so that the thing about, you know, clear communication is it's not necessarily the quality of the words that you're using, the quality of the language. It's how focused that is on what other people are going to do with it. Because other people's heads, when you're communicating something to a team or to an audience, they're not empty heads just waiting for your information to fall in there. Their heads are all, it's already full of stuff and prejudices and urgencies and needs and priorities. And so great communication is about understanding that and speaking to that already full and busy head. And if you like, making space in that head for your message to go in. And that means it's got to be very clear. It's got to be compelling.
Yeah, we kind of say, don't treat people how you like to be treated. Treat people how they like to be treated. And what you're really saying is speak to them from their point of view, not your point of view. That's an awesome tip. That's a good one to get you started. What would be your follow-up to that in terms of great communication for leaders? So once they've got that little intro bit nailed and grabbed your attention, how do they keep it?
Do you mean as you're continuing to give the message, or do you mean afterwards?
Yeah, well, let's go on that one, say, presentation, continuing to deliver the message. Once you've got them hooked in, how do you keep them engaged for 30 or 40 minutes? And then I will follow that up with, how do you keep them engaged longer term?
So in the short term, there are a few very simple things you can do. One is break your message down into ideally three discrete parts. So, for example, it might be where we are, where we need to be, how we're going to get there, and signal to the audience very early on, that's the journey we're going on in this 40-minute presentation. When you do that to audiences, what you're saying emotionally is, I've done all the hard work of understanding this for you. I'm laying this out. I'm making this simple and easy for you to follow. that will tend to very often keep audiences with you. One of the worst things you can ever say to people is something like, hi, everyone, we've got 40 minutes. I've got 182 slides. Let's get started. Right? Because and it's not just because that's accidentally funny. And it's not just because that sounds like a lot of information. It's because you're saying to the audience, you're going to have to work hard cognitively. And that's what the audience pulls away from. Because if your 182 slides were all winning lottery numbers, people would be with you for every single one of them. It's not the quantity of the information. It's the fact you're asking the audience to work. So anything you can do that reduces the audience's need to work, anything you can do that says, I've done the work for you, I've thought this through for you. A few other things you can do are, if there are any benefits to listening or staying with you, let people know or give them a hint of those at the beginning. So, you know, classically, it might be something like, I need to go through a few some very HR-y stuff, some very processy stuff. The outcome of this will be, though, I think we're going to be able to take every other Friday off. Right? I made that up. But so you give a bit of a benefit. Stick with me for 15 minutes and it'll all be all right at the end of that. That's another thing you can do. And then the third thing you can do is to vary the way that you're delivering the message. So, for example, you might choose to deliver the same message in three different ways across those 40 minutes. And one of them might be using a storytelling technique, some form of narrative. One of them might be literally setting out data in a very interesting way or a visual way. And another one of them might be relating it to either something that's previously happened in the business or something that's happening with a competitor to make it very relevant and very obvious to the audience why they're listening to this.
Yeah, awesome. I think just listening to that, those communication tips are useful for anything. It's not just leadership, right? It's for marketing a product. It's for selling a product. It's for leading a team. It's for communicating to your other half. It's just general good life advice, right?
Yeah, good advice today on Valentine's Day. especially as I had to say, we can't have a Valentine's dinner tonight because I'm going to a book launch. Yeah. That's true, by the way.
My husband's playing football, so there you are, Lee. You're in the same camp as him. So I asked you the second follow-up bit to that question in terms of, obviously, leaders... some leaders, shall we say, will not generalize everybody, but a lot of work can be done around, you know, those big all hands that meetings that happen quarterly or an annual conference and people bring in somebody like you. So they were an amazing communicator. They practice, they deliver an incredible speech. And then you don't hear of them again until the same meeting next quarter next year. So what, you know, as a key communicator and a great communicator, what would be your tips for keeping that communication consistent?
I think there's a great question, and it sort of, you hinted at some of the answers, obviously, in the question itself. So one of those is visibility. And it's really easy to underestimate how important visibility is, I think, in many ways. And there's a great story about Laurence Olivier when he set up the National Theatre, and which was a huge thing to do, and to get the funding to build that giant building on the South Bank of London is quite an astonishing thing. But the story goes, well, it's not a story, it's true. Olivier knew, was always in the building. He was in the previous theatre and he was in the National Theatre now. He was always there. He was always on site. And apparently he knew everybody by name. To people who just served tea, right up to, you know, main administrators and so on, and he would greet people by name, and he was there, and he was getting his hands dirty, and he was Sir Laurence Olivier, you know, but he knew everybody. And I hope that doesn't sound too sort of unrelated to the world of business, but I think partly because he was visible, he was there, he was, so to speak, in the trenches, but also he recognized and appreciated people and set up reciprocity, right? When you meet someone and you know their name. No, I'm not saying every leader and every organization can know the name of everybody. Of course they can't. But I've seen very often one of the problems is visibility. And there are basically three ways of being visible: speaking more, so either attending events, turning up at lunch and learns, giving a quick overview, making videos, being on podcast, right? There's all sorts of ways of speaking. The second way is networking. So turning up to things, getting out, meeting people, meeting more people, supporting some of the employee networks and that kind of stuff that happens a lot. And then the third way is writing your ideas down. So again, sending out emails, white papers, little ideas. I know a couple of, I won't mention them by name, but I know a couple of leaders who sort of run what I would call semi-personal blogs. So it's not everything. It's not all their angst, but it's much less formal than just corporate communication. And those seem to work well. But obviously, there's the other issue of feedback and improving. As a, you know, none of us are perfect communicators. All of us can get better in many ways. So I think part of the sort of follow-up, part of the message, keeping the messaging going, is seeing if you stick to that idea of having what I would call goal-focused communication. In other words, what do I want the audience to do as a result of my messages? And then part of your feedback is, are they actually doing it? And if they're not doing it, I hope I don't annoy some of your listeners by saying this, but if you're not doing it as a leader, I would, even if you don't agree with this, it's a really useful idea. Take that responsibility. It's 100% your responsibility to communicate better. So if, you know, there's the old, I think it's Marshall McLuhan or someone, the meaning of a communication is the result that it gets, that very old phrase. And I think it's really true. It's not enough for you to stand up and do an inspiring speech at a town hall and then 6 months later say, well, nothing's changed in the culture. That means no one listened to me. I think it's much more enabling for the leader to stand up and say, OK, I gave that speech and nothing's happened. What could I have done better? What could be better? Take that as feedback for themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's certainly something we'd advocate massively, is that constantly asking for feedback. And then obviously just keeping keeping the communication consistent, don't disappear. So that's the visibility thing, yeah.
Yeah, consistency is, in fact, you just reminded me, I did some work, it was slightly tangential, but I was involved in a bigger project and we did some work on client engagement. And one of the things I asked people to do is look at brands that they really loved and identify what were the things they really loved. And the same names, it was fascinating, the same names came up again and again. Virgin Airlines, John Lewis, Pret A Manger, these same companies came up. Greggs, actually, interestingly, Greggs. And the word, one of the words, there were three or four words that came up, and one of them was consistency. And it was fascinating. People said, wherever you are, you walk into a Pret A Manger, you walk into a John Lewis, you walk into a Greggs, and you know exactly what you're going to get. And that makes you feel very comfortable, makes you feel very, you have a lot of faith and trust.
Let's talk about building trust, because for Rachel and I, we would always say that building trust can be quite a long-term thing, and it takes a lot of investment, and you need to be consistent, and you need to know people's names, and you need to be interested in them. But you have some quite quick fixes for building trust. I'm interested to know how they work.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think trust is something that's sustained and deepened and built over time. And I think there are no shortcuts to that. However, there are many situations professionally when we don't have that luxury. Very, very, very many of them. And I suppose perhaps that point of view comes from a background in sales where sometimes you'll have a very short amount of time with a client. And particularly in this world we've been in for the last couple of years, where most things have been online and we're, as you said earlier, almost certainly going to stay in a hybrid world, even as we, fingers crossed, sort of come out of the whole COVID thing for a while. I think many of our attention spans have shortened and many of our expectations of, I mean, I've noticed already, for example, whereas two and a half years ago, people might have said, we don't know each other, can we have a coffee? Well, we now know actually having a coffee together, that's really half a day, isn't it? By the time you've got dressed and got somewhere and had a coffee and got back again.
Yeah.
Whereas now, how can we have a coffee is now almost certainly, can we have 20 minutes on Zoom as a first interaction? So there are many moments when getting some sort of connection, some sort of trust very quickly can be very useful. And I think those are very simple things. They're partly about being authentic. They're partly about being prepared. And particularly in a sales environment, they're about not insulting or patronizing an audience. So an old-fashioned sort of sales approach would be very much, you know, the hello prospect X, you know, what's been keeping you up at night recently, and all that. I mean, there's just no room in the modern world for all of that sort of stuff. If you're in sales, you have to come to meetings prepared and ready. You have to have some interesting insights, which is a great way of building trust very quickly. If you have some good market knowledge that your client doesn't have, that's great. And if you can educate your client on their own problems and deepen their understanding of their own problems, that will often be a very successful sales meeting, even if you haven't sold anything by the end of it. Because one of the best ways of gaining trust is to be an expert, to be a guru in your particular space. And the other thing I think, and sorry if this sounds a bit cliched again, but it's to be very human. Again, this comes back to good leadership. I think many of the very best leaders are very human. They're very approachable. They enable rather than disable people.
That talk to me a little bit more about your the point that you've picked up there. You talked about attention spans having shortened. Is that something that you've noticed in particular across the last couple of years, or does it go back further than that?
Oh, I think it's been happening. I think, like many things, COVID has accelerated stuff that was happening already. But even in my world of professional communication, business communication, I mean, 13 years ago, when I started doing this full time, as in I decided I would stop performing so much, even 13 years ago, it would be quite normal for people to say, can you come and help us with a problem? We've got up to 2 days to give you to do this. I mean, I would almost never be offered 2 days now. I mean, half a day feels like a big stretch for many organizations. Some of that's to do with attention span. Some of that, of course, is to do with increased commercial pressures, and the world is different now. But certainly, I mean, you can probably take it back to the invention of the smartphone. I think that's done something to our expectations. And I hope this doesn't sound like too much of a tangent, but particularly what online, being online, has done to us is before we had sort of ready, easy access to things like Google, we lived in a world where we had to turn to experts for information and advice. Whereas we don't need experts for information anymore. We have the opposite problem now. We all have far too much information. There is absolutely nothing anybody on this planet knows that I can't find out with a quick Google search. There's just nothing. What I need, and what most of us need now, is for people to guide us with that information, to make sense of information for us, to give us a reason to look at certain bits of information and disregard others. So we live in this sort of strange world where we've got loads of stuff going on, but we need to get the answers from that stuff very quickly. And that's partly, I think, why our attention spans have changed.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It sort of circles back, doesn't it? We know where we go for the information, but how much of that is actually right? And back to your point and what you said about at the beginning is, what do I do with it when I've got it? How do I use that information to get me to solve the problem that I've got, or to make a decision about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, in a way, this goes back to leadership and networking. Just this morning, I was looking for the building I live in. There are four flats, and we've got to get a big survey done of the maintenance of the building, so we know over the next decade how much we have to spend on maintaining the building. And this morning, I was looking around at surveyors. I've been tasked with finding the three surveyors, get competitive quotes. And the interesting thing is, all as far as I can tell, all surveyor websites are identical. They all say the same thing. They all offer the same service. They're all a similar fee to within a few hundred pounds. And as it happens, one of the surveyors is connected to someone I know, and guess instantly which one I feel more comfortable with, which one I feel happiest with. Of course, and it's not rational, it's not right, it's not even fair. But I think, you know, to go back to leadership and visibility and networking, anytime we feel a connection to someone, anytime we've seen someone speaking recently, we just find it easier to trust them by and large.
I think that's really interesting. I think the role of trust is changing slightly, and our need for it is changing. It makes me feel a little bit sad in some way, but it makes total sense that it relates to technology, and that we don't need it as much because the technology helps us to trust the people because the information's validated. For example, those people that you went out to get those quotes for, yeah, the one that you have a connection with personally makes you feel a little bit closer to them. But the fact that the others have a website and it has valid information on it and the prices are all the same also makes you more comfortable with whichever one you go with. Because you've got an easy way of comparing all the information.
I think that's sort of true. However, I think what we see in the real world, I mean, if we look at, I'm slightly hesitant to step into the world of politics, but if we look at, for example, politics or health policy over the last couple of years, what we see absolutely is that facts don't matter, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying who's right, who's wrong, but facts just don't matter. What matters very often is how facts make us feel, and often whether we trust the person giving us the facts, or whether the facts speak to our tribe or not to our tribe. And one of the great things, I mean, a little acronym I use a lot when doing communication work and with leaders is HAMPIE, H-A-M-P-I-E. And And HAM stands for Hearts and Minds. And the reason this is a useful acronym is one of the messages I go over and over again is you have to connect with people emotionally as well as with their minds, right? I'm not saying it's hearts, not minds, it's hearts and minds, but you have to be able to get an emotional connection. You have to be able to get your people to believe you or to smile when you speak or to be thought-provoked when you speak or to be intrigued or to be excited. You know, you have to get some kind of emotional connection. And then PI stands for pictures, interest, and enthusiasm. There are three great ways of getting emotional connection. So pictures is in its broadest sense, it's storytelling, metaphors, analogies, comparisons. When you listen to really persuasive, compelling people, very often you'll hear that they speak in very visual terms. They're always saying things like, imagine if, dot, 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 wouldn't it be great if, dot, 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 where we need to be is, dot, dot, dot. The I is for interest, and that's coming back to what we said earlier, which is you have to speak to what's interesting to the people you're communicating with more than yourself. And then E is for enthusiasm. I think it's a non-negotiable leadership quality. You have to believe your own vision. You have to believe your own where you want people to be, because if you don't believe it, no one's going to believe it for you.
Yeah, I still feel sad with it. I just listened to all that you just said, and I just think Boris Johnson went on that training course. Communicating COVID at the beginning, and there's a man that I think loads of people wanted to trust, and they did for a bit. And then it's awful when it doesn't stack up, isn't it? But I suppose that's the facts not stacking up. I guess I'm not disagreeing with you. I think everything you say is totally valid. I think my sadness around this, is sadness the right word? My frustration around, you know, it's sadness around the whole thing is that we are so time poor, we don't have the time to build those long-standing trusting relationships. Therefore, we have to find quicker ways to trust people because we have to do jobs, don't we? So you have to do this. And I love that you said that you do that fundamentally by showing human emotion, but it puts us in a more vulnerable place when there's so much information. You have to make decisions quicker, and it's like the chances of getting it wrong now, I think, are higher because we're doing it far more and the stakes are higher, and trust isn't built as slowly, therefore naturally you make mistakes quicker, don't you? Because we have to trust people quicker.
Yeah, I think all of that is true, but I also think there are some opportunities within all of that as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we're certainly getting a lot more done, aren't we? And there's a lot of opportunity with that. It's just that everything's got a pro and a...
Yeah, I think in terms of trust, though, there are more opportunities. I think there are more opportunities to build, you know, when you understand that when we're dealing with people, awash with information, all sorts of conflicting, confusing information. It really gives you a chance to build more trust, actually, because if you're the person that can mentally take people by the hand and guide them through that information, if you're the person who can show them in among all these competing policies for where a business should be, this is the one that works and why, it's much easier for you to build trust. And deep down, we are mammals. We evolved in groups, and trust, I think, it can often be viewed as a reflex in some ways. It literally is are you going to hit me or are you going to kiss me? Right? You know, I mean, it's that sort of instant visceral thing, and we can build on that. And I don't think there's anything inauthentic about that, actually, because.
Certainly good advice for people in that, like what we do, service-based business, and you know, where, like you're saying, you are essentially buying the advice, aren't you? Not the facts. You're buying somebody to help you.
Yeah, in pretty much all services, that's happening. Yeah, and it comes. One thing I wanted to say in the networking earlier actually was a phrase I love to use is build your network before you need it. I mean, the number of people I've sat down within leadership positions, and I've said, if you could go back in time and do one thing differently in your career, what would you do? And so often people say, I wish I'd focused on my network earlier. I wish I'd known how important my network was, because so many of us tend to think it's our knowledge and our technical ability that's going to make us good leaders. And those things are important. I'm not saying they're unimportant, but the network and having a great, deep, wide, functional network is such a great way of having pretty instant trust, actually.
Nobody ever really remembers the great projects you delivered, do they? That they can usually only remember one, but they always can remember how you made them feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that leader made you feel. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for that. We normally get our guests to wrap up by leaving us with three leadership essentials. we're going to make this quite difficult for you because we've covered quite a lot of topics from communication to networking to performing. So over to you, Lee. What would be your three leadership essentials to bring all that together?
We have sort of covered some of the ones I'd because you did ask me to think about this in advance. But I think if you don't mind me repeating, because I think there are. So I do think. Well, I don't know if these are three separate things. So speaking, writing and networking, getting better at those three things or doing more of those three things in ways that affect your teams, your businesses, the people you're trying to lead. I think they really are the things to be great at. But of all of those three, I think probably speaking is, and maybe this is because this is my background, this is what I work with, but being better as someone who can speak up in a room and guide other people and be compelling to other people is so key, because we reserve a really particular kind of respect in the world for people who are able to stand up and make their point and take us with them. It's a rare skill, people who do it well. So those are the three things I'd focus on, and of those three, that would be the one.
Awesome. And if people are interested in getting in touch with you, or perhaps getting you to help some of their team members or leaders to become better communicators and to speak better, where would they get hold of you?
I'm all over the internet. If you type Lee Warren Speaker into Google, you'll find me. You'll find my website and Instagram and Twitter and so on.
Oh, we like it when there's an easy call to action. You've practiced that one, haven't you?
Lee, you call your website Invisible Advantage.
That's my limited company name. And in fact, that's an older website. So my real website is leewarrenspeaker.com. That's the best one to go to.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I'm sure people will be looking at that. Thank you very much indeed for spending some time with us. You've left us with lots and lots of tips that people who are listening to this can take away. So really grateful for your time and having you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to seeing you in August.
Yeah, my pleasure. Looking forward to it too.
So Lee and I will be sharing a stage together at the 12th annual Alexander Technique Conference, which will be held in Berlin. This year's topic is now AT Congress Berlin 2022. Lee, what will you be speaking about?
I'll be doing a couple of things. I'll be doing something in the opening ceremony. And then one of the themes, and this will probably come up a couple of times, is really how Alexander Technique teachers can grow their business, how they can market themselves in a way that's authentic, but also effective.
Awesome. And I think some of those techniques that you shared with on communicating, I was listening to them thinking Alexander Technique teachers could definitely benefit from talking more about them than what they do.
Yep, absolutely. And I don't want to ruin any surprises, but certainly one of the things we do as Alexander Technique teachers is we're very good at talking about what we do, and we're not necessarily very good at talking about things that matter to the people we want to teach.
No, absolutely. And I will be joining on stage as a keynote speaker after you. You'll be introducing me, which I can't wait for. And I'll be offering some techniques and tips on marketing the Alexander Technique. So I think building on some of the things, you'll be getting them thinking about differently and then probably putting it into more practical tips and advice. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody there, aren't we? And I'm certainly looking forward to building some trust and meeting you in person.
Yeah, great. Me too. And it's probably worth saying there'll be lots of time for questions and comments as well during our times together.
Definitely. And if anybody wants to, that's attending that conference, that wants to ask a marketing or sales question, they could do so by getting in touch with yourself or dropping me an email at leaders@scaffoldcoaching.com. And I will be sure to answer that question in my presentation. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Berlin.
Great, me too. Looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you found today's leadership essentials and coaching discussion points useful. If you'd like to read more about the approach we take, check out our website at scaffoldcoaching.com.